good. And the reason I use overblown is because most papers now will emphasize that pitogenic carbonate has accumulated as a result of dust deposition. So the older literature would emphasize weathering as well. So but that's the question that I pose to the group. And if we back up just a bit and ask, what is the source of calcium carbonate in soils in general, and look at two potential answers, and that's the parent material and the dust. If we go back and look at the figure, this is from Yenny's 84 soil resource book, and where he he cites Hilgard as in 1892, in his opinion, that the sheets of lime cemented subsoil result from downward movement of calcium carbonate dissolved in penetrating rainwater, which reascends without the carbonate in evaporation transfer. The salt gradually accumulates. And the reason I emphasize this is if you look at this figure, it has this vertical line which indicates that there is an initial amount. So it's very similar to clay illuviation, and that is moving from the upper horizons and being carried down and accumulating in the subsoils. And when Yenny and Leonard did their 1931, I think it was, transect going from Missouri across Kansas into eastern Colorado, and producing this classic paper and classic figure showing that with increasing rainfall there is increasing depth to the carbonate zone. And it was this model of having a uniform, homogeneous parent material in which the carbonate was translocated by illuviation, basically. Well, if you go then to the 1950s and the establishment of the Soil Geomorphic Project, 1957 to be exact, they encountered a different situation, but still had the same model, basically. So this is the area in the Desert Project, southern New Mexico. But here in 1959, and this is one of the classic sites, and basically they describe the profile, which is igneous alluvium. It's rhyolitic, you know, big classic of rhyolite. So you've got an A and a B2T, rather, and a B2TCA, that was before the lowercase K. But then the petrocalcic horizon they describe as a C, as a master C, as parent material, basically, and calcium carbonate M, and they subdivide that. And so what's interesting then is to look at the manual, the soil survey manual at that time, and the solum, that is the part of the soil that's affected by petogenesis, you know, the A and B, but the carbonate was down here in the CCA horizon. So, and that made sense in the upper Midwest with, you know, calcareous loss or calcareous glacial till, and with an acid bottle you could go down, no effervescence, and then finally you hit effervescence. Oh, we hit the parent material, and the petogenesis has been up there. But what they realize is that pedogenic carbonate is petogenesis. I mean, that is major petogenesis. And so today we would, you know, now call the petrocalcica BKKM horizon to emphasize that this is a pedogenic process, not illuvial redistribution of homogenized calcium carbonate. Well, what this brought up then was an if-then situation, that if the little weathered igneous alluvium contains no initial calcium carbonate, and if the groundwater can be eliminated because it's, you know, 300 feet below, then the calcium carbonate must come from dust. And dust happens. There's no doubt. This session would definitely emphasize that. And so here we are. You know, we get dust storms regularly. You get the jet stream coming down. A lot of dust moving regionally. A lot of dust moving locally. And so one thing I want to point out is that the dust hypothesis is easy to envision. And especially if you had guys come down from the, you know, from the Midwest, well, not so much mid, but the East and the Northeast, where you're putting calcareous dust as lime, agricultural lime, will feel easy to think about. Okay? So what I did some time back for a book chapter is I went back to the dust traps that were set up as part of the Desert Project. There's 6-7 dust traps. And I wanted just to make a graphic of the amount of dust falling on different parts of the landscape. And that would be this column here, total dust. And I thought, well, it'd be interesting to put this column beside it, you know, the calcium carbonate in the dust. When I did that, I thought, my gosh, you know, there's really not nearly as much as I had envisioned to begin with. There's a tiny fraction. There's like, you know, 60 times more, in some cases, total dust than calcium carbonate in the dust. And if you go back and look at, well, what is the size fraction in the dust? Well, it's very fine sand, mainly silt, and some clay. So the question came up then is, if you got all of this petrogenic carbonate, where's all that silt? Where's the lost cap, you know? And so you see this over and over again. You get these really strong petrocalcicrine, and the question is, where's the lost cap if it's dust? But in fairness, if you go back and read the Desert Project literature, their hypothesis of dust being the source, they address this problem with another hypothesis. And that other hypothesis is, well, the dust lands. Basically, the calcium carbonate parachutes out, and then the dust is on its way to Texas or somewhere. It's you know, dropping. You say, well, but these aren't acidic soils. They're all, you know, pH 8 and a little above, but still, that was the explanation. But moving then forward, they recognized in the literature, you can see this evolve, is okay, the dust itself is 0.3 grams per meter squared per year. And then there's a little bit coming off as, you know, soluble calcium in the dust, either on the exchange complex or dissolved minerals. But most is coming down as calcium in rain, 1.5 grams. So total, you're almost at 2 grams if all the calcium went into making calcium carbonate. You're looking at about 2 grams per square meter per year. So, okay, that's, you know, pretty plausible. But still, and again, here's another if-then situation. If the source of calcium carbonate is atmospheric, combined dust and rain, then why are there such differences in the amount of calcium carbonate on neighboring parent materials? I mean, side-by-side comparisons. Why is there such a difference? And for example, the basalt in the region. You can, turn a clast over and pendants on the bottom of that basalt. Do the same thing with limestone. Pendants. And calcareous throughout. Real strong carbonate accumulation. You go to a neighboring parent material, the other 5 soil-forming factors held constant, you flip over a rhyolite clast, or granite, or a arcosic sandstone, you're not going to find it. Okay? So if it's coming from the atmosphere, what's going on here? So if we go back then to the original question, you know, parent material and dust, things changed in the literature from, well, it's more than just a big, gigantic liming truck dumping calcareous dust. Now we're talking about the source of calcium. And if we can account for the carbonate as being CO2-derived, then we're now with a new question, and that is it atmospheric or is it weathering? So if we set those up as hypothesis one and hypothesis two, and if we look at the evidence and then the inferences that we have to make about whether or not the evidence supports the hypothesis, we could, you know, put it in its framework. Now, what comes up first would be, well, what about the unweathered clast? And like this, I mean, look at these big rhyolite, they're not weathered. So that's true, but they only have cleavage. And if you're a pedogenesis trying to break this big stuff down, it's really hard. And what we see are the remaining unweathered class, the class that have, you know, endured it. What about the finer, more weatherable, more material that would disintegrate? And you don't have to look far to find rotten rock, you know, saprolitic class that have decomposed. You say, well, what about the fact that the atmosphere accounts for the accumulation rates? Say, you know, this, you know, roughly 2 grams per square meter per year. And you say, well, the atmospheric almost accounts for the accumulation rate. So we're talking 2, but here's a table compiling this. And in the Desert Project, we get, you know, based on radiocarbon dating and other dating techniques, we get 1 to 12 grams of calcium carbonate per square meter per year. And you go to other places like Kyle Canyon, they get up to 15, you know. If you have all of this calcium coming down, you know, dust and rain, where would it go? We're dealing with desert soils. We're dealing with non-flushing profiles. So surely it must be accumulating. And, you know, there's morphological evidence. So you have, you know, the BT and the BK and the BKK and then the sea horizon beneath it and so forth. Well, they're almost non-flushing. And what we mean by that is there are many sites that have been instrumented to track the water table for decades. And here's an example of this soil profile. And looking at the years 1960 to 64, and there are times, this is a legacy from 1959, but most of the time they're non-flushing, but then there are some years where you do have flushing that takes place. Well, but the strontium isotopes, there was a really classic study that was done on the upper La Mesa geomorphic surface, and there's a stage 5 pedogenic carbonate petrocalcic horizon, and it was by Rosemary Capo and Oliver Chadwick. And basically what they did was to look at the strontium coming down and measuring its isotopic ratios, and then looking at the you know, the acidifiable or the leaching ratio, and then looking at the silicates whenever you dissolve it with HF. And sure enough, I mean, it really does line up real well if you look at the carbonate in contrast to the silicate detritus. Okay, so it doesn't appear that it's inheriting a similar strontium isotopic ratio from the silicate detritus. That's a good point. I mean, that's really good. But then some people point out that strontium isn't calcium. And what that means is they're right next to each other in the periodic table, and they're divalent cations, and they've been used in you know, geochemistry for many, many years. And if you're dealing with inorganic chemistry, that's, you know, probably. But strontium's not a plant essential nutrient. And it's not in the vast abundance that that calcium is in. So what we decided to do then was, why don't we look at the calcium isotopes in this region? And so we looked at 40 calcium 42 and 44 and 43 and 44 to see if we could use it as a tracer, to see if we could figure out, is it coming from the bedrock or is it coming from the atmosphere? Okay, and to show you what we have here, The igneous. Okay, so if you look at this ratio, 42 to 44, the igneous rock is got a very wide range. Okay, but the pedogenic carbonate, you know, carefully brushed off, has a much narrower range. Then, if you look at the dust, and here we're making an inference, we're saying that if we collect the upper 3-4 centimeters of material right beneath the desert pavement, we're going to use that as a proxy for the dust. And so, if you look here, then the pedogenic carbonate isotopic does match. And so there you go. It is from the dust. But if you look at the creosote bush is even a better match with the pedogenic carbonate. And so here we might have it's biogenic. Is that, you know, it's mining it and lifting it up, leaf litter, decomposing it, maybe precipitating it. And so it's not dust, it's biogenic. Okay, and if we look at the limestone, it's you have the limestone rock and the pedogenic carbonate. They line up. They line up with the dust. They line up with this. So you could say here, well, let's see. That's it looks like it's from the rock, but it might be from the carbonate. Now, if we shift over to the 43, again, we have a very similar situation where a wide range in the lithology of the rock, igneous rock, a very narrow range in the pedogenic carbonate. But here, even better, say, oh, you could argue, there's no doubt that the dust, the carbonate in the AVs, matches up with the pedogenic. It's got to be that. And here, you know, but still, it falls within the creosote bush range. And the same is true with limestone. This is very narrow, but the limestone rock lines up very clearly with the pedogenic carbonate. So you say, ah, it's from the rock. It's got to be from the rock. And nope, it can't be from. It's got to be from the dust. Look at this. And well, it still falls within that. So my point is that if you're arguing that calcium isotopes is evidence for atmospheric, you can argue it. If you're arguing that it's not, that it's from weathering, you can argue it. It's inconclusive. We have some greenhouse studies going on, but right now it's inconclusive. So, but the main point that I want to end with is the problem that still bothers me is where's the loss? And there's such striking parent material differences. I mean, you can again hold the 5 soil forming factors constant and go hiking down this road, and you know whenever you're in limestone because you've got pedogenic carbonate. And whenever you turn the corner, you know that you've hit igneous. Okay? So it really appears to be more complicated. And I'd just like to end with 2 questions. And that is, if you look at a map of the calcium in the rainwater, basically, and you read the explanation for why calcium is so high in the rainwater in the West, in the arid West, and the question is calcium concentration in the rain high because of dust from calcareous soils? And that's what they say. They say, yeah, you got all this calcareous dust, that's why it's so high. But, are the soils calcareous because of calcium in the rain? So I just want to leave you with a chicken and egg dilemma here. Okay. Thank you. Well, and there's no doubt that you've got a region with topography. That region gets 250 millimeters of rainfall. On the slopes, those soils and those plants see less than that, and the run-in areas can see more than that. And that is reflected with the depth of the, you know, calcic and petrocalcic horizon as you move laterally. That's true. But even still on the slopes, especially the winter rain, is, you know, kind of slow and gentle, and it does infiltrate, and you have a, you know, profile wetting. Yeah, Ted.
You're looking at the creosote bush, mm-hmm. and what's going on in the soil that you're measuring, the 40, and it's interesting, the 43 to 44 ratio, they're right on.
Yeah.
Which, and that, what was the other, 42, 44?
Right.
Could it maybe have something to do with this ion uptake by the bushes, and the bushes pretty much pretty easily pulling it up from the soil? And so that's where it's coming from. So you're just kind of measuring another factor of the same thing you want to correlate.
Well, so there's no doubt about it. All of biology prefers the lighter isotope. You know, it just is more energetic, and it's going to preferentially take up the lighter one and leave the heavier. And that's why we didn't do 40. One reason we didn't do calcium 40 is to try to get away from the biological fractionation that occurs. But that's what I said. We're doing some greenhouse studies to see if that really is the case. Yeah. Okay.
All right. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Chris.